Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Ask the Industry podcast, episode 129. I'm comedian Simon Kane, and for those of you new to the show, this is the podcast where I interview the most influential people from the worlds of stand-up, comedy, radio, and today, comedy journalism. Mark Boozy is the founder of the British Comedy Guide, a database of all comedians, TV shows, sitcoms, industry news, and more. The website is amazingly useful, and I put it up there with Chortle and Beyond the Joke as one of the most useful websites for any comedian trying to make it in this industry. It's great for learning about what's going on in the industry as well as the opportunities through their new tool known as British Comedy Guide Pro. It's basically a paywall system. I have an account and I do a lot of research on guests through their database. I think it's also great for finding writing opportunities as well as comedy competitions that you might want to enter. If you want to sign up to it and you use the code ATI, you can save £5 off your first year's membership. If you use that code, I also get a couple of quid, full disclosure, and that money goes straight back into production. You save money, I get money, comedy journalism gets money to keep going. We cover that in the podcast. Let's dive into the episode where we talk about the state of comedy journalism, the future of the coverage for new acts, his relationship with the Edinburgh Fringe, and so much more. If you're new here, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button. If you're old here, please do remember to give us an honest, ideally positive review in iTunes. And either way, please do join the Facebook group, which is called Ask the Industry Podcast, and it's on Facebook, obviously. But for now, this is Mark Boozy.
So British Comedy Guide started, I've forgotten the year, that's how long ago now. It was a hobby, I started it's called British Sitcom Guide at university, just to learn how to program, because I'm from a web development background. And then very quickly, some other very passionate comedy fans got involved, primarily Aaron Brown and Ian Wolfe, and we've worked together over the years to change it from British Sitcom Guide into British Comedy Guide, when we realised there was other areas of sort of comedy we wanted to cover, like panel shows and live comedy, etc. And it has just grown and grown and grown. I still think it's sort of a hobby, but it's one that's completely and utterly out of control.
So it is your job now?
If you looked at my bank account, I'd be better working at Sainsbury's than this, but it just about covers its costs.
Okay, so it was basically a school project, or it was just a fun project to code?
Yeah, so it was just a hobby. Okay. I wanted to practice, like a total nerd in my own time, right, how to program certain things, and why do that for nothing when you could, for example, I think the first pages were Fawlty Towers and Blackadder. Mm. You know, why not program with Basil and stuff? So yeah, but I should emphasize very quickly, other people came and helped me. So particularly what you can see nowadays, a lot of that code is Aaron, not myself, because he's much better at making things look good and work well.
Okay, so that's phase one of, and you can't remember the date that was?
I'd have been at university. Annoying pause for edit here while I work it out. That'd be about 2005, I think, 2004 maybe, sometime around then. It's annoying there's not a nice birthday for it, because then you can have a party or something. But
yeah. I'm only trying to put a date on it so we can think about where the internet was at when you started, and where other where there were. I mean, Chortle, I think, has been around for longer than that.
Yes,
if I'm correct.
Chortle has been around for longer, and It was early days for the web, though. It was everything was sort of quite clunky. We just got over, I think, the spinning email me type GIF thing.
Yeah,
so we're
not
quite that old, but it was definitely clunky early days of the internet. But also exciting times. But it's amazing how much things have changed, because I remember us getting sent our first video clip, and it was a new world. And like, how do you? And it was real player, and people and physicists would have to download it to their computer and then get the player to play it. So it goes to show how things have moved on, because now video is one of the primary things people look at rather than read. So things change.
Yeah. So where was your place in that hierarchy of publications at that point? Were you trying to be the next Chaucer at some point, or were you, you know, because if that was the established player, what was the...
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the first, this is why it's sort of a weird orange line. The first several years were just mucking around.
Right.
There was no, it was just, okay, quite like this show, let's write some pages on it. There was no attempt at any kind of... Didn't even matter if people didn't really read, to be honest. It was just doing it for the fun of it. Although people started to read it, and then people started to request information on other shows. And then we started having a few successes. I remember Green Wing, the Channel 4 comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
We wrote some stuff about that. And that was a show that got quite a quick cult following. Mm-hmm. And there was no information online about it. So we, for the first time, started chatting to Channel 4 and started to realise, oh, you can chat to the channels, mm-hmm. and they'll give you content and information and advanced details. So that's sort of how that started to build up, and it's just started snowballing. Although I'd say it's in the last probably 5 years we've taken things pretty sort of intensely and seriously and tried to really grow the site in a serious way.
Is that, I mean, we briefly touched on it before we started recording, like, so Time Out, for example, in London has stopped recovering. I think it's nationally, but I know in London they don't cover comedy. And I wonder whether you saw that as an opportunity to move forward. I know you've been for British Comedy Pro, for example. We joke about it behind the scenes, but how long were you working on that? And it was...
So I'm genuinely gutted that Time Out has stopped. And my view is it's not enough. It's perhaps a weird view to hear, but you'd think the less publications there are, the better for another publisher. But actually, I think there's not enough now. It's lovely to hear other people's views on things, get different takes on things. And we're down to, you know, just a handful of online sites. And we're at the fringe at the moment. And obviously, the chat is very much about how there's very little coverage from broadsheets. It's disappointing. So it's a real shame they've gone. I don't think we could quite, you know, we're not a magazine, so... Yeah, absolutely. So Time Out would get in the hands of people that wouldn't normally look at comedy. Something like British Comedy Guide is visited by people that tend to know comedy already, whereas Time Out would be put in the hands of people that may have never even been to a comedy club before. And I think that is a lovely way of reminding people, hey, comedy exists, head to your local club and why not see some for the first time?
Mm.
And that's also, I think, why it's a real shame in terms of the broadsheets. You know, it's trying to get people that don't really have comedy on their radar particularly, get it on their radar for the first time. British Comedy Guide, meanwhile, exists for people that already know comedy, I guess. I mean, we do definitely get people that don't know comedy Googling something and finding out about it. But, you know, the majority of visitors are aware of what comedy is already and trying to find the next thing within comedy rather than being complete outside of it entirely.
In your Google Analytics and in your research of what people are looking for, do you find it's more, because for example, I personally think most people who read Chortle are us, like the industry, you know, like I think that's largely their base. So I'm wondering whether there is a core group of nerds, to you know, comedy nerds, to in a nice way, I'm saying that, who are looking for actual coverage of stuff in a way that isn't, you should email this person because there's an opportunity here, or all the, you know what I mean, like where do you tread that line, especially with your new British Comedy Guide and the move forward to kind of try and get a pay subscription for performers?
Yeah, so I don't know about other sites particularly, they need to see their own analytics, but we get 500,000 people a month visit the site. Obviously, within that, there's going to be a core group of people that visit every day, as analytics shows. And I guess we identify those as the comedy, and I use this word genuinely in a nice way because I'm one of the comedy nerds.
I'm one as well, it's fine.
Yeah. People that, you know, you have to know what's going on next, who this is, what's going on. Mm. So there's that group, and then there is the bigger, more casual group of people that might be watching a show on TV and want to know more about who's in that show and who wrote it. Mm-hmm. And then if we're lucky, and they will hang around and then go click on, look at the online videos or something. So I would say where we fit within the thing is we're quite broad, you know. Mm. But as we might touch upon later, we've launched something called BCG Pro, which is very much industry focused, and it's a separate section of the site with its own look, and that is very much for people that work or want to work within comedy. And there we can get much more nerdy and put details in we wouldn't normally put in a story for the general public. So if, for example, there's a new competition, the general public story would have information on where to see that competition, mm-hmm. who's involved. BCG Pro would have information on how to get involved and tips for progressing through the competition.
Totally, yeah. And as you said, there's not, I personally believe there's not enough coverage in comedy as well, but then I think I'm at a level where, I mean, I'm in a weird place where I'm not sort of the starting out person, because there's got to be a cut-off point. You can't cover everyone, you know. So A, I'm wondering where your personal cut-off point is, where you wouldn't have like a profile for a certain performer, and B, how you mediate not just covering the big TV names and actually sort of offer back to I'm going to put myself in it, but like middling people who are kind of moving up but aren't clickbait heavy, you know, like titles for I'm not going to get you as much traffic as, say, Ramesh Ranganathan, for example. So how do you mediate covering someone like me or someone at my level versus a famous person that would clearly get you more traffic?
So this is why listeners can't see this. This is why I'm looking knackered, because our aim is to...
He does look tired. He does
look our aim is to cover everyone. And I'd urge people that are listening, go to comedy.co.uk, find the people tab, type in your name, and hopefully we've got a page on you. Obviously, the aim is to have a page on every single person, even if you've only done one open mic night. We're not always going to know about people at first, but hopefully we get the name in the database via a competition or something. But then, obviously, someone like Ramesh, who is on TV every night of the week, we're just naturally going to get more photos and more interviews, mm-hmm. links and more things related to him. So his page is going to look more busier than someone that's just started out on the open mic circuit. I'm honestly not, don't want to make this whole podcast a plug, but BCG Pro would allow you to jazz your page up with a number of other sort of information as well. Mm. But we will also naturally just try as much as we can to load details in. It is tough, though. I mean, at this comedy festival here in Edinburgh alone, there's something like 1,500 plus comedy performers. Even if I gave every one of those a single minute of my day to try and update their page, that's clearly, you know, loads and loads of work. So
your relationship with the comedy circuit and going to see things, like, obviously you work very hard and you spend a lot of time on the website, which obviously can be done at any time of the day, but you don't want it to be spread out over, you know, 24 hours. So how often do you actually get out and see comedy? Like, what's your relationship with the circuit like? I know you've like judged a few competitions and things like that before. Like, are those good for you? Are they better than going to see comedy nights? What's your favorite comedy night?
I don't see as much as I want, but I think that's the answer that everyone would ever say. If you're a comedy fan, you should be wanting to be out every single night of the week. Mm. I think Edinburgh's obviously a lovely time. I can see lots of shows here. On a sort of week in January, I may only get to two or three a month. I don't live in London, so I live in the south. So it requires travel to get to any club, but I'll still try and see as much as I can. Obviously, in terms of knowledge building, mixed bill shows with multiple acts are better for just getting to learn who people are and what their style is. But that said, you know, as a comedy fan, I do like, I'm not going to say an hour, I'm going to say 50 minute long.
Yeah.
A 50 minute long show. Because that, you really get, you know, you can, I'm speaking to someone that does them, you know, you get to do that longer form stuff and do callbacks and things that a short club set wouldn't allow you to do.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, because okay, so your preferred medium of watching someone is a longer form thing, or
yeah, I think so. Though realistically, so the last couple of days here in Edinburgh, I have gone to lots of mixed bill stuff just because I can get knowledge on four people mm-hmm. within the space of an hour. And then, you know, then I'll aim to try and see the longer show at some point, but it's a quick way of getting, okay, that's that person. Mm-hmm. That's what they sound like. That's kind of their stage persona. That's their style of comedy. That's the sort of topic they're talking about.
Right, okay. Yeah, no, because I've spoken to a few other judges or previous judges on this podcast, and a lot of them are like, actually, it's quite nice just to see a snippet and just sort of get a vibe from them. And then maybe I'll look them up later, but you don't have time to go and see everything. So it's interesting that you're, I think, the only one that said, I'd like to see the 50-minute, not hour, one. And why you said specifically, you made a point of saying 50 minutes.
I think...
aside from the fact you've got to get in and out and get to the next thing, but yeah.
It's just, it's very rare. I mean, everyone listening to this, I'm sure, has looked at their watch during even quite a good performance. Mm. An hour to pay constant attention and laugh fully is tough. I mean, I'm sure you spoke about the 40-minute lull on this mm-hmm. podcast loads. You know? Yeah, it's a long time to spend with someone, however good they are. It's just especially in Edinburgh when it's a hot room and whatever. So just, yeah, 50 minutes feels nice. I'm equally not against the half-hour show. They don't really happen, but you can still get a lot done in half an hour.
Mm. So why I like my venue is aircon.
Yeah.
Never have to worry about it. I can have any time. I could wear a three-piece suit, not even feel it. It's going to be great.
come along, see it. We're here now. It is lovely and cool.
I know. I'm not going to wear a three-piece suit, but it genuinely crossed my mind. That brings me on to attention spans, because obviously online in particular, people's attention span. I think it's interesting, because I think there was a period of time where everyone was saying attention span online is going down. But I think on videos, for example, if you've invested in a YouTuber, I mean, last night I watched a half an hour video from a YouTuber that I've been watching for a while, and I was thinking about it. I was like, that's a TV program. That's like an actual length of time that I've sat with that person and sort of enjoyed their time. Do you find that, do you have like the heat map thing on your site? Do you find that people are like scrolling just the information they want, or they're actually reading whole articles? Like, what's people's attention like on your site?
Yeah, video is very interesting, because I think the advice is changing in that it was absolutely, definitely, without a doubt, do not do over 2 minutes. Just don't do mm-hmm. it. If any YouTubers are listening to this, I'm not sure everyone's aware of this, but your YouTube account has a retention graph. Mm-hmm. Go into your analytics and Google, you can see at what point people are dropping off your video. It can be quite depressing to look at. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the graphs, and we looked at many of them, without fail, would drop after 1 minute something. That is if you kept them that long, which mm. would, you'd had to have a very strong opening gag to even get past the first 5 seconds. But things are definitely changing, as you allude to. I think because devices are getting better, mm-hmm. connections are getting better. You know, previously, 4 or 5 years ago, most people would have been watching on a computer screen, and sitting at your desk watching comedy is a bit different and weird. Now, you know, 50%, if not more, of internet traffic is mobile-based mm-hmm. and tablet-based. So that, you know, that is people sitting on a bus for 10 minutes with great 4G. Why not watch something longer? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, laying in bed, whatever. It's more comfortable to watch longer form stuff now. At the same time, quality has massively improved. Mm-hmm. It's some amazing, amazing stuff out there, filmed beautifully and edited lovely and really well scripted. So not only is it easy to watch, but I think people get more confidence, like, it's worth investing your time in this, because mm-hmm. you know, this is going to be great. That all said, there's a lot to be said for still taking account some of the basics. For example, don't put lots of credits on the front of your video. Just get straight in, get your first gag there in 3-4 seconds. Let people know it's funny and it's going to be worth them not skipping onto the next thing, because, you know, especially if you're on YouTube, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the right-hand side that looks more enticing if you don't mm-hmm. keep people. I think still the of all the brilliant things that is going on, sound is still a bit of an issue. People are doing great scripted stuff and forgetting to make sure people can hear them. So, you know, do invest in a boom mic or similar.
Yeah, totally. You also, so before we move on to BGT, I was going to say BGT just because I emailed you before and I embarrassingly wrote BGT instead of BGT.
It's happening a lot. It's cool. We're with it.
Good. Okay. So, America's Got Talent. We were talking about. We were talking before about British Comedy Guide Pro. But before we get into that, you also, previous to that, as like a revenue model, did adverts and like custom adverts and sponsorships. And I find it really interesting because like I bumped into someone literally last night and they were saying, I bought loads of posters, because you can buy like posters around Edinburgh and like different zones for your posters. And they were like, I don't think they sell anything. I think they're just about awareness. I think it's literally there so that people remember it. And then when they look in the program to buy something, they're like, oh, I've seen that. He said they've clearly got a budget, so they must be good, because you don't just come to Edinburgh if you've got a fiver, you know. And I was a bit like, okay, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I've never thought you've got money, so you must be good at funny. But you know, so I'm wondering, your ads, obviously I've seen on the page where you sell them, you know, it tells you how many hits you get and that sort of stuff. Do you think your ads actually sell tickets? Do you think they move that way? Are you tracking that, or is it purely about awareness?
Yeah, the strapping listeners, I've got some opinions on this. Yeah, now, posters are ridiculously expensive, and I'm going around taking some pictures of some that are facing walls and stuff. You know, I totally see there is sort of a point of them, and I know at least two comedians have said, I have bought posters not for a single ticket sale, but because I want the industry to know I'm here. Mm-hmm. So as a profile building thing within the industry, or let's be honest, as an ego thing for some people, posters can make sense. I'm almost certain they don't, because how expensive they are, they almost certainly do not translate to that many ticket sales.
And how many there are? Like, I think they just blend in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many. That said, we run the Comedy Poster Awards. I think the most striking of posters.
That was my next question about that.
Oh, yeah, cool. Let's talk about that in a minute. Yeah, the most striking of posters can make a difference. But your average poster of a white male comedian smiling at the audience, there's loads of them out there, and I think the industry noticed them. But to answer your actual question, you know, the great thing about the internet is it's all technology. You can track clicks and the path through to ticket sales. You can prove to advertisers this is working for you.
Yeah.
We're also a lot cheaper than posters, just to get the plug in there. And I'm not just talking about my website. I'd like to talk on behalf of all websites. You know, it doesn't cost the earth to advertise, and we can deliver, you know, tens of thousands of eyeballs for a quarter of a price of a poster. But not only is it about clicks, I think just much like a poster, you know, it reinforces the reminder that something's happening. And we do get involved in campaigns which they'll do physical, particularly in London, there'll be some physical stuff, and then they'll want some online backup, and then they'll want to put something in the newsletter. And it's just, you know, if a consumer gets five or six reminders from different places, when it comes time to make that decision where you're next going with your partner, or it's going to take the family out, then that show is probably higher up in the list than something that hasn't advertised at all. Mm. That said, as we may come on to, there are ways of doing things without advertising as well. Mm. So, yeah.
I had an idea for your site, but I didn't want to tell... I want to tell you it like this, because I thought it'd be fun to talk about, and B, I know how stressed you are. So I didn't want to... I remember saying to you, oh, I've got some ideas, and you were like, just let me bed into this right now. But you know, so you know you do the... Obviously, you know you do the posters awards and stuff, and you've got your database of comedians. I thought, wouldn't it be great if you had a database of posters that historically you could, like, click... The designer, and it would show you all their, you know, like all their previous posters that people had submitted, and then that way, you know, if people are looking for a designer, even like it's a pro thing, you know, you could see, oh look, they've made this for this person or whatever. It'd be quite fun to, like, you know, move around.
Absolutely. So if people don't know, the Comedy Post Awards are about the best artwork at the Fringe. Mm-hmm. They've been running for a number of years, and Gina Lyons is the producer and does a brilliant job. British Comedy Guide, we've come on board to help with the admin and website side of things. Mm-hmm. And this is our second year, 2019 now, coming up. We're going to be involved. And we do very much want to build a database of, really support the designers and photographers that are involved. We haven't quite got enough data yet to do the idea you have, but let's absolutely do that. Yeah. I was lovely to hear that one designer involved last year mentioned he got a job off the back of someone seeing his poster in last year's thing and wanting his... great work on something this year. So
yeah. One of my favorite, I've got two favorite design quotes. One's from Adil Sukan, who said, your poster is going to be seen by more people than your show, so you should invest in it. And it really embedded it. Like, ever since then, I've really put a lot more effort into my posters, because it's true. Like, you think about how many flyers you give away in a month, or you know, how many hits a web thing gets. And I think people just think, oh no, if I've just got this photo, like a selfie of me, and I'll just photo, like, a word art around it, and you're like, it's a lot of, it's a first impression. That's you know, that's not you getting on stage, not your first impression, it's that. And the other one was my friend Beck Hill said, everyone should be putting more effort into their posters, because they're kind of all looking the same. Actually, and she's corrected herself and went, actually don't, because it's going to make my job harder if I have to put more effort into my posters, because I already put quite a lot in. But if you all step it up, I'll have to... love to make more work, which I thought was really great. Although she did a really interesting thing this year, where she crowdsourced posters. I don't know if you saw that, where she got her followers to like submit what they think the show is about. So they made a load of posters for, I think they made about 30 posters, and then she had her own little award.
Yeah. I hope it's really worth visiting. This is, God, I'm getting quite pluggy today, aren't I?
No.
It's worth visiting comedyposterawards.co.uk and just browsing through, because when you see them all next to that, mm-hmm. like you can definitely go, oh, that one stands out. You know, and there are a few already that it's a thing that the public can vote on, and there are a few already I think people are going, wow, that's different, that's really in your face, that's colourful, that's interesting.
Well, so first of all, you've heard a few episodes of this, it's always pluggy. It's the point of it.
It's not my style. Yeah.
No, I know. It's hard to... I know what you mean, because I'm always like wary of, so like whenever I have a PR on this, I always sort of have to explain to them, this isn't a PR job, this is about you, not your clients. So like, if your clients are your work, then we can talk about that, but it's hard to, so plug away, it's absolutely fine. So let's talk about British Comedy Guide Pro. What is it for someone who hasn't been to it? I mean, you know, you've sort of touched upon what it actually does, but if I was looking at getting this is your minute pitch, then let's do that, and then we'll move on from the plug. If I was a comedian, I've got an account, but if I was a comedian who didn't have an account and they were like, what is the point in me having another, you know, subscription to something, why should they join?
I guess why we're sort of struggling to slightly explain it, if I'm quite honest about it, is that BCG Pro is for everyone that works in comedy, whether you're a writer, performer, producer, you know, agent, whatever you might be. That makes it very hard to come up with one pitch to mm-hmm. explain to all. But let's just chat about, perhaps, I guess, the majority of your listeners are performers in one sense or another.
I'd say about 70% are performers, about 15% are industry, and then about 10-15% are just nerds.
Cool.
So you might get some nerds joining.
By all means, welcome to. Yeah, so agents and stuff do have a look on, and there's various sort of tools for you to help manage what you do. For example, in Edinburgh, we've got a thing which you can track your reviews for your acts and benchmark against others and things. But for a performer, we've got three levels. We've got starter, emerging, and gold. Starter, as the name suggests, is for people that are just probably coming onto the open mic circuit and just looking for the sort of basics. Emerging is going to be the biggest section, I guess. That's for people that might not be their full-time job, but they've got a year or two under their belts and know what they're doing. And then gold is for people primarily that are doing it full-time, and you know, their living is in comedy. There's a whole bunch of stuff. We've got exclusive articles. For example, we've got a critic writing anonymously, which I'm really enjoying. Not everyone's clocked on yet to some of the stuff he or she's saying in there, but that's worth a read.
Time for a mid-pod break. I hope you're enjoying it. I'm loving learning how the site was put together and became so... It was started like for a project at uni. It reminded me of when Jeff Rowe came on from the Leicester Comedy Festival, and he told me that he started that festival as a uni project, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. All your small ideas suddenly become commitments as soon as they become big enough that people take notice of them. I find that so fascinating and really inspiring. Right, it's time for the mid-roll ad. In this time, you could go over and become a Patreon from $1, or you could give us a review. Ideally 5 stars, or 4 stars is just as great, but as long as it reads like a 5-star. Becoming a patron means that you get ad-free versions of the podcast and exclusive behind-the-scenes content. Get ready to either review or donate the show now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you do it? Did you become a patron? Did you give a one-off donation? Did you leave us a review? Come on, you must have done one of them. You do any of them? Come on, this is easily worth a pound. Let's be real. Or at least give it a review. If you got this far into the podcast, you've either died and left it playing on the background, or you know that it's worth something and you should give me some money. If you can't afford it, I totally understand. We're all pretty broke. But if you'd like me to keep making content, I need some money. So if you've got a sec, please go and give it to me now. It's lovely to hear him talk about how this site has evolved through the readers and the comedy community and how both of those have shaped that growth. The fact that it's his first ever interview, let alone podcast, I think this is turning into a really fun and lovely episode. And given that he's never done a podcast or interview before, it's just full of advice on getting noticed and coverage and why you should become a BCG pro. We're going to find out more about that in the next bit. Let's dive back in.
Yeah, I really like that as an idea. I mean, like, I keep trying to work out who it is, but it's quite a fun idea of that's one of, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but one of the things that I really like about, sounds really schmoozy now, the things that I'm spending a lot of time on are the anonymous reviewer writing for you, the sort of database area where, like, you can kind of go into it, and also the opportunities section where and I even said to a friend, I said to someone the other day who, like, said, oh, you know, why should I join? I said, well, the more of us that join, the more money they can put into getting, you know, more time to find the opportunities to put in. You know what I mean? Like, it's chicken and egg. You've already got quite a lot on there, but the only way you're going to be able to expand it is if people join.
Yeah, absolutely. Please don't find out who that critic is, because they probably lose their job.
No, but I think everyone reading it, I mean, as someone who is, in my head at least, moving up, you know, in this festival you feel like you felt like you were before you arrived, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh my god, I've moved nowhere. But it's one of those things where, as far as I can work out, and as I don't think I've mentioned this to you yet, but I was going to make a British Comedy Guide group, like British Comedy Guide Pro group, which would mean that we could, you know, share articles and be like, oh, have you seen this one? Oh, did you miss out on that one? Oh, let's talk about this. What do we actually think about this? Because although you have comment sections and you allow us to have those feedback, I do think sometimes I shy away. I know on Chortle, for example, people shy away from sometimes using the comment box because they're worried he won't come and review them if they say something negative. Whereas, you know, on Facebook, there's been, I don't know if you saw, there was one article in particular that went quote-unquote viral that was liar awards or something, like, where people had, he found people that had misled people with their awards in the listings, and people had shared that all over the place, but no comments were on it underneath, just sort of saying, this is a mean-spirited article, oh, I can't believe he'd spend so long trying to, like, pick apart everyone's, so that's why I was thinking there's got to be sort of another area that people could, you know, talk that, you know, you would still see, but it wouldn't be there forever, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we God, I'm gone well pluggy now. This is new me. We have forums, which are pro section is paywalled, so you could probably chat fairly comfortably in those about things.
That's okay. But what do you think about, so paywalls are, I think a lot of people are used to getting everything for free, and I think that's fine up to a certain point, but you have to eat.
It's really tough. We have existed for over a decade where we've put a paywall on absolutely nothing. And this is the first thing we've paywalled. Yeah, initially, you know, it's tough telling people that, oh no, this content's behind a paywall. Hopefully people will very soon see, though, that the money we've got in, we're very much using for good, I'd say. We did our first thing the other month where we funded some spaces on Turtle Canyon's new sitcom, and two people got paid work to work on that show. as a result. And we are working now on making more opportunities for members. The money is being funneled straight back in to new content research, and as you touched upon earlier, you know, yeah, absolutely, the more people that join, it's not going to make us rich. We're going to pump that money straight back into to doing more, to making, you know, more content, more articles, putting in more data, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I wouldn't say bugged me, but one of the things that irked me about when I put out a thing that I put out a pod a little while ago, plugging you, and you didn't ask me to do that. That was not, you know, like any sort of, you know, thing from you. I got an account and I liked it. And the reason I did that, interestingly enough, if anyone's interested in why I did that plug, was because I don't like the way journalism is going. I think there's a problem in the industry, in specifically comedy, in the coverage of it, and I think that there needs to be more support at the sort of, because the newspapers are going to lose, you know, traction for the print thing as it goes on, because that's just a dying medium and people don't ever really, maybe the Metro will outlast most of them because, you know, it's just trash paper at London or whatever, but I think a lot of other places are going to have to go online, and I think they're going to struggle to find a way of doing it. And I think the reason they're going to struggle is because they're not... I think The Guardian have done it well, where they've got like a comment section and you can get like little badges for like the level of contributor you are and stuff like that. And that really helps to make you want to join and stuff. But with our industry in particular, I just don't think there's enough investment in it. And so, you know, to see... you, and I don't know if you see it this way, but you putting your foot down and going, we've done 10 years, you know, working with sponsors and working forward, we now want to work direct with the readership. Is that how you see it? I mean, is it?
To be honest, we just we need money for things. It sounds bad. Yeah. For example, you know, this year we're running three different awards. We're doing the Poster Awards, we're doing the Malcolm Hardy Awards, and we're helping coordinate the Comedian Choice Awards. Mm. They require trophies to be made. They require there's no sponsors for those things this year. So that's us funding them. You know, I think it's a very worrying time for sort of journalism in general, because costs are going up drastically. You know, I'm sure any comedian that's come to Edinburgh, you've done your budget. You know how much your flat is. You know how much, you know, the travel is and the food and stuff. Journalists have those same expenses, but we don't have any ticket money coming in, so our only funding there is advertising. You know, we're trying to make it work. It's really, really, really tough to this as I'm crying. But you know, it's harder for something like if you're someone like The Mirror. I mean, you just, how are you going to justify that to your editor? Hi, I'd like £1,000 plus flat, train travel, and food and wage to go out to Edinburgh for a month. They're going to say no. Stay in London, sit at your desk and write stories about TOWIE, because you know, that's
review it when it goes to the Soho. You know, I'll be here in a month.
It's really tough, and I mean, it's no, you know, coverage is definitely down.
Mm. Yeah, I think in terms of that. See, when you think about, I mean, it's another thing that I think I've particularly been thinking about this year is if you're a famous comedian. Right, I'm not going to pick Ramesh again because I feel like I'm picking on, let's say, McIntyre, for example, right? Maybe he doesn't even need press coverage, but let's say McIntyre. He's an easier person for you to come up and cover because that review will get hits. And if they use the review, your site will get hits because it will be mentioned on his poster. So you have this perpetuation of, you know, you coming up and then reviewing the big names because they get you in the hits. And then that sort of trickles down. Whereas if you had budget, that meant you could go and see what you want to see. You might go and see the famous person because you might be interested in them and their career anyway. But if you had free rein to go and see anything, it would allow the trickle-down effect, I personally think, to happen quicker and easier, because you don't have the, I need to get a certain number of hits because that's how my site earns money. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think luckily in British Comedy Guy's independent, so my desire, it's never happened yet, is to find the next superstar, be the first person to see them. You know, wow, this is. And by the way, I haven't seen your show yet, Simon. So
I was going to say, you've not seen the next superstar.
You know, it. Yeah, that. So we're lucky, but yeah, if you are writing for a bigger publication, they have their desires, mm-hmm. and it will be a bigger name. If you're lucky, as some of them do, they'll get a big name, and they'll get the big nice picture for the top of the page, mm-hmm. of that community, and then they'll be able to sneak in inverted commas, sneak in a couple of other reviews for lesser known people. It's tough, mm-hmm. yeah. It's a real shame, because you know, it doesn't take long for some people to go from someone that would not get that coverage to being someone that's on TV a lot, mm. and then that review suddenly becomes worth traffic and things.
Mm. So awards, are there too many?
Oh wow, interesting question. I don't think so. I really want to emphasise though that you don't need awards to be a great comedian, and there are some people that do an amazing job, and they just, for whatever reason, don't quite fit what a judge might be looking for. That's not to say they're not the brilliant comedian who does a fantastic job. So, you know, there are several people out there that have been working for decades and haven't got an award, but are right up there, at, you know, at the best of the best. So you absolutely don't need awards. But at the same time, I think it's nice awards do exist, because it helps give people a leg up sometimes. You know, not everyone needs one, but sometimes... there's a lot of new act competitions, but if you win or become a finalist, any of them, why wouldn't you put that on your poster or in your blurb? It's a nice thing to prove to bookers and to audiences that you know you've reached this level.
So you're now taking over the Malcolm Hardy Awards.
We're facilitating them. They're going to say the same as they were. Just they need a bit more admin help, and John Fleming, who's done it for many years, has done an amazing job. But we're coming in to help out with the admin. We're good organisers, so yeah. we can do the spreadsheets and stuff.
What made did they approach you? Like what made that happen?
No, absolutely. They weren't here last year, and they were, in my view, totally and utterly missed. Because if you look at awards, there's one area that definitely is missing, which is, you know, if you're going to prance around in a chicken outfit for an hour with fish entrails on you, or you're going to do a show.
So you have seen my show.
Or you're going to do a show, you know, in a black box where you never show your face. That's very unlikely to come up in any other award ceremony. But the Malcolm Hardy Awards Originality Award will absolutely be... for that kind of stuff. And meanwhile, there's, you know, there's the Cunning Stunt Award, which celebrates, you know, people talk, not on stage stuff, what you do around other things. And there's, it's lovely, there are I'm going to call them the Slicker Awards, but we shouldn't forget that comedy is meant to be funny, and it's meant to be different, it's meant to be interesting. And I think the Malcolm Hardy Awards celebrate some of the fun and weird bits of the fringe.
Yeah. I mean, I always have this debate with everyone every year, where people say, "Oh, they're going to get nominated," or "My thing's too weird," or I don't know, or "I'm not what they're looking for." As if, you know, because every award has an agenda. That's what their criteria is, and also their agenda will change with who they book as their judges. So you know, just because you're not what, let's say, the newcomer award is looking for this year, because they're after, like whether it's a quota based thing, or it's or even if it's like a limitation thing, because like I was talking to the Dave Comedy Award thing, and I don't think it's a secret, but they said they see 600 shows, and like you said, I think there's 1500 in total, so you could be something they want, but they just haven't seen it.
So is this the Edinburgh Comedy Awards?
Yeah, the Dave.
So,
For like the joke for their jokes award.
Oh right, I'm also involved in that, and okay. The aim is to see as many shows as possible, mm-hmm. and get jokes down. If I don't know if I should talk about this, but hopefully, hi Dave, if you're listening, sorry if I'm talking about it, but you know they're after one.
I like how you said that like it's a person.
yeah. Oh, Dave exists. they're after one-liners.
Yeah.
So that you tend to check out the one-liner comedians and people that you know are going to have a lot of one-liners in them first, and you try and see as many other people as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not going to be quite possible to cover everyone.
Of course.
That said, again, sorry Dave, if this isn't meant to be what we say, but like you can give people a nudge if you've got one-liners in your show and say, "Come see my show. I've got some good one-liners." contact@comedy.co.uk by all means. Email me.
Well, no, that's what I did recently. So, you know, spoiler behind the scenes of this, you know, for anyone doing their own PR or whatever, I tweeted two one-liners from my show. What I considered viral, they went viral, you know, it had like 1,000+ likes and 500 retweets or whatever. You know, for me, I think for a lot of people, that's a lot of things. And so my friend was like, send them in. Like, I mean, they might not come see you otherwise. And that was when I got the reply saying, you know, we go and see at least 600 shows. And I was thinking, oh, okay, well, they're never going to come see it sort of thing. And it comes down to budget again. You know, this festival has expanded so much to the point where coverage of everything is impossible. And if it is possible, you have a sponsor or you have a budget or you have something that enables you to have the power to go and see this many shows. And I think, you know, like, I was talking to a PR the other day, and we're getting on to your relationship with PRs, but I was talking to a PR the other day who said, you know, I want to get in as many people as possible. But if say, for example, I get one agent in and like a couple of reviewers in every week or whatever, that's great. Whereas 15 years ago, you would be expected to get every paper in because there were only 7 shows or something ridiculous. And so you, if they weren't coming in, you weren't doing your job or you weren't listed anywhere properly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure I can do a lot of agree with
you.
Oh,
sorry, yeah. I thought you were going to say something.
No, you totally agree with you, yeah.
Okay, so PRs and your relationship with PRs. In fact, let me ask you this question to move into that area. It should be obvious from the site, but what do you cover and what don't you cover? In particular, I know you don't cover reviews, for example, or you don't do reviews, but you said you used to.
So we, so in terms of the Edinburgh Fringe site, we try and do features, that being interviews and also... trying to give the news of what's going on in the festival and picking up. There's already been a fire alarm at the Pleasance. Has happened already with day one of the Fringe, and just that kind of stuff, collect that all together. But also we do listings, but when within the listings, our USP is we link to everyone's reviews from elsewhere. So we did review in 2010, and I think we realised our time would be better spent would be better spent collecting up the reviews from others who there's some very knowledgeable people out there and collating it and letting people decide. But the other reason we did that was there are some shows out there that have got 1-star reviews, and if you read that, you'd think that's not for me. But actually, if you take the context of all their reviews, they may have 1 1-star review and 6 or 7 4-star reviews. You need to see that in context. That 1-star review, that reviewer clearly wasn't for them. But more generally, that show is, you know, objectively good because more people like it, more reviewers like it. So we did it to try and help make it clear that, you know, nobody should read a single review, I think, to make a decision on something, because that's one person's opinion. Get multiple opinions. And that was always hard to do, but by us collecting it together, I think, you know, people can get a snapshot of whether a show's for them or not.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think I think it's a combination of laziness, attention span, and too many shows. I don't think people actually take, you know, I asked last night at a show, it was a fairly well attended compilation show, how many of you are reading the reviews on edinburghfringe.com, like, you know, the little thing underneath, and all of them were like, why would we read that? Like, it just, you know, they're slightly fakeable if you wanted to. And, you know, why would I care what Joe Bloggs has written under that thing? You know, they haven't even got their own blog. Why would I read that sort of thing? So I think taking into account what you're reading the review and who you respect reviewer wise is actually really important now, because so many reviewers have their own specific tastes as well, which is impossible to remove.
Yeah, I think, whilst I said we collect them all up, you know, some people listening might have clocked on, you know, essentially we've listed the stars out there and you have to click through to read the pieces, and not everyone has that time. And that's a shame, because actually the review might start, this wasn't for me, but if you are into, you know, Mime Circus, this would be a great show. And the other thing, and in fact, the secret reviewer on BCG Pro writes about this, that sometimes reviewers are just having a bad day. They've seen 8 or 9 shows, they're absolutely exhausted and they're not in the right frame of mind for a show, and whether or not they say it does, it will affect your opinion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, that needs to be taken into account as well. But that never shows up in a review.
No.
That, you know, they don't.
They never say, oh, I was having a bad day.
They won't say, yeah.
Or I got a text before that my dog died, or, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, they won't mention that. So, yeah.
No, I don't do it in every show, but I often start my Edinburgh show by going, like, if you raise your hand if you've seen one show today, right, low if you've seen only two, three, just to work it out. And I remember one person had seen 9 shows before they saw me last year, and I was like, you're not going to laugh.
Yeah.
Like, it's inhuman to laugh for 9, 10 now hours in a day. And if you can, frankly, go see someone about it, because there's no way that is a normal person's, you know, what are you running from? Like, that you need to do 10 hours of comedy. Yeah, because 10 hours of, I mean, imagine sitting watching 10 hours of sitcoms or 10 hours of, you know, specials on Netflix. You're not going to be laughing by the end of it.
Yeah, as someone that has sat through 8 or 9 shows in a day, it's tough. And not only are you doing that, oh, these rooms are hot. rooms are hot. Well, apart from suite.
Except for Simon's venue. Yeah. Except for my venue. Come to mine.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the original question. What does your site cover and what doesn't it cover?
So in theory, we cover every single comedy performance listing-wise, whether that be in whichever section it's in, including, you know, we'll happily cover a theatre show if it's got comic elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we don't do reviews. We leave that to others, but we will link to those reviews. And in theory, we link to everything. And if anyone finds a review we haven't got, we'd love to know about it.
Mm.
Cool. I guess I'm sensing that's not quite answered your question.
Well, no, because I'm okay. So if I'm a performer, I am. if I'm a performer listening to this, and I would like to get more, I don't necessarily want to get an ad right now, but I want to have some sort of coverage under.
Yeah.
Should they be sending in their press release? What things do you, you know, say for example they've made like a short film, or say they've made, you know, they've got an Edinburgh show. Like, what is your coverage like?
Cool. So yeah, in terms of the more general site, if you've made a short film, please do send it to us. Just email us. We'll almost certainly, if it's a good enough quality, put it up. In terms of Edinburgh, I think we're on about 600-ish press releases so far. That's a lot. Mm. We've got a control panel that we ask people to go through, which helps us manage that process of working out who's doing what. You know, we're not going to be able to see 600 people. We're not going to be able to write about 600 people. So in that sense, it's about, somehow, and this, I guess, is going to lead sort of into the PR sort of angle, not necessarily PR people, but how you PR yourself, you know, what makes your show better or different or more interesting than the other 1,000 plus here. And you'd be surprised how many emails do not say anything about that. Hi, copy and paste reviewer name. Sometimes they don't even do that. They CC everyone in the same email. I'm performing a comedy show. Here's the details. Cool. You're one of 1,000 plus people that are doing that. Please, you know, just keep your email short.
Mm.
Keep and funny. No one does funny. It's like this is a comedy festival. If you make the reader laugh in the opening sentence, that's a good sign.
Mm.
Everyone's very serious in their emails. Don't worry about it. We're in comedy. It should be funny.
Completely. I find PR press release. I mean, if a PR's written in press release, it's probably not going to be funny. But if you're a performer, I mean, chuck in a line. You know, you must have a one-liner that you've just got kicking about that you can crowbar in somewhere. And I mean, like you said, how many, you said you got 600 this year?
Off the top of my head, if not more, yeah.
Yeah, so imagine you're sitting there reading, imagine you have to read 600 press releases, make it funny.
Yeah, and this is why I'm looking at, because I have read bits of all those 600. I've looked at every email.
Mm.
Some emails, you know, we'll reply to everyone, but at the same time, yeah, if you made me laugh, I'm going to spend a bit more time replying to you and being interested to come to your show than if you've used the standard form template.
But also, I mean, the other thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it's just how I see it as at the other end. So this is quite fun, because you're like, it's like I'm emailing you in real life and we're just, you know, being able to talk about it. My take on it is that there's only a certain number of type of shows out there. Like, you know, the hero with a 10,000 faces idea, you know, there's only a certain number of stories and stuff. Even if your idea isn't unique in the sense that someone's, you know, covered your, you know, origin story or your whatever it would be before, still brag about it, because you might have seen, you know, 50 stories about dead dads. You know, there's that whole thing about dead dads a few years ago. You might have seen those shows, but you might be like, actually, I'm in the mood to see a dead dad show. You bragged about it. I know now to go and see that one. And it just narrows it down for you. It doesn't matter that it's been done before. It's still a unique selling point.
Absolutely. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with not having a theme. You could just have an hour of gags. That's totally fine. Mm. Just in that email, be different than everyone else in your email. Just put a funny line at the top of it. Or you know, somebody emailed us a video of their daughter plugging their show. A 30-second video going, come to my daddy's show. That's different. You're going to pay more attention to that than just another standard blah, 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 blah.
No. Get a daughter for next year. I get it.
Get to work.
That's what I was going to say. You know, 9-month PR plan. It's great. Okay, so your relationship with PRs, what is it? How do you work with them? Do you work with them? What's that about?
Yeah, we absolutely use PRs, but equally, you don't need a PR. You absolutely not need a PR, but it's for some people. So here's the key thing, I think. If you're an organised type of person that's quite good at writing, i.e., you know, you've got good spelling and grammar, etc., you probably don't need a PR because you can email publications direct. We're very, very happy to receive emails off of anybody, as I know a lot of other publications. And in fact, sometimes, you know, as we just alluded to a minute ago, it gives you that chance to be a bit more unique with it. You can put your personal take in that email, and the reader will get that coming across. PRs exist, though, because a lot of comedians, they exist at two levels. At one level, they exist for the people that are disorganized or don't think they're necessarily great at spelling, grammar, or selling themselves, and in which case a PR person can be very helpful there. They cost money, though. So if you're the former group, you don't need one. Yeah, if you don't think you can hack emailing everybody two or three times with reminders and collating what you're doing into a nice thing, you know, PRs do have their place. And then at the high level, when you get to your Ramesh Ranganathan stage, they do act as a bit of a barrier between the act. You know, if Ramesh was dealing with his own PR, he would get emails all times of the day and phone calls and things. So at that sort of level of fame, they can, and also at that level of fame, sometimes you have to have a conversation about something because they want something changed or whatever. It's easier for the PR person to say that than the act themselves.
Well, okay, so my follow-up question to that is, so for example, Chortle will, if you pay them money, they'll come review for guaranteed. So obviously you don't need to like have PRs for stuff like that. And I often think, you know, I mean, that gets a lot of criticism because people think, oh, well, you're just paying for a review. But I'm like, you can either guarantee it by paying whatever, 250 quid, or you can hire a PR and they can't promise that he'll come. You know, to me, that doesn't make any sense. And the same sort of thing where you think, you know, PRs are great for the top end of people who would have millions of requests. But then at a sort of lower down level, if you have just a Google Drive and you can keep track of things, it's, I mean, I personally do all of mine. And you know, I'm not organized. I think people think I am because of this, but I'm really not. And I was going to ask, is there anything that you wouldn't cover? So, for example, if there was a show that got the title maybe made you think it had a questionable theme or something that you would make the website not look right to a new person landing on it. Like, has there ever been, and you don't have to like name it or anything like that, but has there ever like a show that has a weird title or theme that you think, actually, I need to see this before we could take?
There was a misogynist show a few years ago that, you know, personally I wouldn't agree with. We wouldn't want to write about it in any direct sense, but at the same time, for comprehensive coverage, we would link to the people criticizing that show or defending it, if there's anyone doing that, and then let the audience make their own mind up on what was going on. Yeah, so I think often let the audience make their mind up. Obviously, we never want to endorse or promote something in a way that, like, if we didn't agree with it. But I think it's very rare. You know, comedy is quite liberal, and it's rare you get an absolute, you know, horrible person saying horrible things.
No, totally. I think it's just worth. I think there's a misconception amongst performers that they would say something like, you know, oh, my thing wouldn't be right for it, or my thing wouldn't be something they'd cover, or my thing's too weird. Whatever their excuse is in their head. And so I think aside from, let's say, misogyny, racism, or sexism, you're pretty much open to getting a press release.
Oh, yeah, there you go. absolutely, yeah. And if a comedian out there is saying, "Oh, you're not getting any coverage," it's worth looking at how you're approaching the press, and maybe you need to do that in a different way, or try and be smarter, or the Malcolm Hardy walks back, do a cunning stunt. That's a way of getting people to notice what's going on. Yeah, that it's don't get me wrong, it's tough. You've got your show to do, you've got your flyering to do, but if you can find a bit of space to try and do something else on top, that's what gets you noticed.
I don't think I've ever told you this. Did I tell you the one time I tried to do a Malcolm Hardy stunt? I invited John Fleming onto this, but I never hit record. So we just sat for an hour and a half talking about my show, and then afterwards I just said to him, "That's it. By the way, the internet's not going out. It's never going. And it's never gone out."
I love that. Yeah, you didn't win though.
I didn't win. I didn't even get nominated. He didn't like that. I just invited him around to my flat for a cup of tea, and we talked about my show for an hour. I didn't even ask him anything about the awards. I just spoke about my show for an hour.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And that's what comedy should be about, right?
Yeah. Didn't get nominated. So top that, someone. They will. Okay, these are the last quick fire questions. Quick fire for me. You take as long as you want, although we are going to get kicked out in a minute. Right, first of all, who was the first person to believe in you in comedy?
Oh, that's a wishy-washy question. What does that mean? Believe in me?
Who was the first? I mean, it sounds like Channel 4 were the first ones to get hold of you in press terms. Like, who were the first ones to make you think, oh, I could be in this industry? Who were those?
I'm really sorry. I don't think I've got a great answer for that. I don't think it's necessarily happened yet.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I don't know.
I believe in you.
Thank you. Yeah. There's no one. I don't think there's any one moment. I think like a lot of things, like much like if you're a performer, there's not often that obvious milestone. Mm-hmm. Things just slide from one thing into the other, and before you know it, you're doing more. Mm-hmm. You're doing things higher profile, and it's just happened without realizing quite when those moments were.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is one unpopular opinion you have about the industry?
I like being liked, so I'm trying to think of something unpopular. I think it's a good question, but I've heard a lot of your podcasts, and I always think, oh, the people should be more prepared for the end questions, and then here I am going.
Problem is, if I send them that, they always sit there going, oh, I don't want to say anything or whatever. So that's why I never send any questions out to anyone ahead of time.
I honestly don't think I have any unpopular opinions. If anyone is listening to this that knows me and thinks I have, please email, and then we'll get that added to the show notes, perhaps, because I don't want to become egotistical that I don't have any, but I'm not aware of any.
Okay. What is the biggest mistake you've ever made, and how did you overcome it?
Mistake's an interesting one, because I've definitely made some big mistakes, but they're not mistakes in a random way, because you learn so much from them. Oh, cheesy answer, isn't it? But
I think that's fair.
There's been some howlers. I once emailed a test email to 20,000 plus people that was just meant for internal use. That one still keeps me awake at night.
Still got it saved.
But you learn from that I learned a lot from that. Like, be very, very careful what buttons you press. And so ever since, been very careful. So you learn from everything. And I think if you don't make mistakes, you're not necessarily pushing yourself or whatever. Mm. And some things, and they're not necessarily mistakes, some things really haven't worked. We've put a lot of time and effort into some things that have just not taken off. But you need to do those 10 things, and then of them, 2 will be the ones that really, it turns out, fly, and you've got your 2 successes. Just annoying in advance. You don't know which 2 they're going to be.
Mm. Henry Ford said, 50% of my advertising works and 50% of it fails. The problem is I don't know which is which.
Mm.
It's totally the problem. Okay, who is the most underrated person in the industry?
There's lots of underrated people. From our own team, it's Ian Wolfe, who does so much of our data entry and managing data. But from the wider perspective, there's people, there's venue managers, there's techs, there's people that just don't get any credit, but without them, this thing would all fall apart.
What do you think is the biggest problem in the comedy industry, and how would you go about solving it?
I would say it was funding. The model is all the money's at the top of the pyramid, and the bottom layers have none. And that in itself has many, many connotations, from making it difficult for working class people to even start out, through to even when you've got a level of success, you know, if you, it's really tough. You got that day job, you've got to somehow keep that going because you're not getting, even though you deserve it, you're not getting enough money yet to go full time. You know, the that very top of that pyramid is continuing to get richer and richer and richer, and they just need to trickle a little bit down. Would be very helpful for the rest of us.
Definitely.
In you know, from venues through to, you know, publications through to performers.
What do you what's one thing you wish you were better at?
Listening to myself. So you know, when I transcribe interviews, I hate hearing my voice, and apologies listeners for this voice. Generally not being calmer. I think it's really, you know, there's a lot to do, and sometimes just need to be a bit zen about it all, and that will weirdly probably help me more to make sure I do things in a calm and collected manner. Yeah, so probably that.
What's one thing you think you're great at?
Nothing, because I'm modest.
Modesty.
I think, you know, not just myself, the whole British Comedy Guide team, we are incredibly passionate about comedy, and that hopefully comes through in what we do, and we work really, really, really hard.
What is what the best bit of advice you've ever been given?
I think work hard. It goes to show everyone that's had any level of success in comedy has worked really, really hard. Even the people that look like they're being lazy are not. They're working all the time.
And last question, what's one bit of advice you wish you could tell your past self about running the British Comedy Guide's website? Just so you don't
go to bed earlier. Yeah, no, I think it's it is. There's been moments where it's like, is this going to work out? But just keep going, keep doing good stuff, and hopefully that leads to people visiting, and in turn leads to you have to do more.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. It's been a genuine pleasure.
That was Mark. I loved hearing him talk so passionately about comedy and being a comedy nerd. As a fellow comedy nerd, I love meeting another one of me. How his site has progressed and evolved, and the sadness of the changing landscape of comedy coverage. It's so true. We all need money, and journalism needs money more than ever. Everyone's used to getting everything for free, and frankly, that is fine, and if anything, I really like that model. But if you value something, you really should pay for it, or you should really give them something back. If you want to become a BCG Pro member, and I highly recommend you do as a account holder myself, if you use the code ATI, you can save £5 off your first year's membership. You save some money, I get a couple of quid, journalism gets some money, and everybody wins in the entire community, because we still have newspapers and people able to cover our industry. Please do consider becoming a member. If you've got any more money and you want to become a patron, there's some links in the show notes for that to get ad-free versions of this podcast. Also, if you'd like to just give me a one-off donation, there's a link in the show notes for PayPal. If you like this episode, you might also like the episode with Bruce Dessau from Beyond the Joke. Love that episode. He was so excited to talk to. He also reviews for the London Evening Standard, so it was great to hear how those two publications work in tandem. Or you could listen to the episode with Ben Williams from Time Out London. When it did comedy, it no longer does. But that podcast is full of exciting tips and hints and tricks on how to get noticed by journalists and to get yourself more coverage for your shows. The Ask the Industry podcast is a Fruit That Got in Gravity's Way production for the internet. All elements were created by me, comedian Simon Kane. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for subscribing. And thank you very much for rating and donating if you do. I'll see you all in about 14 days' time. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.